Imagine you gave a dollar a day to a worthy cause, but you did it along with thousands of Jewish people around the globe, and you all donated to one cause every single day. Thousands of your $1 bills pooled together towards one cause daily. What's the impact of your dollar then? You don't have to imagine it. You can and should do it by joining Daily Giving today. Head over to dailygiving.org and become a daily giver today. That's dailygiving.org. Jewish Money Matters, episode 371, More Money, Less Headache, with business coach Esti Starr. You're listening to Jewish Money Matters, the podcast where Jewish wisdom and spirituality meet your money and your business. Money is a means to serve God in this world with joy, to build a life that leaves an imprint way beyond our time in this world. I want you to discover the secrets to Jewish wealth, to gain practical and spiritual tools to break free from the shackles of financial worry, to design the joyful, rich life that your soul desires. Welcome to Jewish Money Matters. I'm Yael Trush, and I'm so glad you're here.
Dollars are exciting. Mm-hmm. As you get a little older, it's tens. You don't really think in dollars anymore, but you think in tens. Mm-hmm. So let's say my older kids, my little ones still think in dollars. The bigger ones, it's already like tens, 50s. You get to a certain place, you start thinking in hundreds.
Yes.
Yeah. Most adults already think in hundreds, especially if you're anywhere from like lower and getting into middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into middle class, you're probably starting to think in thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Most people never graduate thousands. There are millions of people who never graduate hundreds.
Uh-huh.
Knowing the units your person thinks in is really significant in pricing strategy.
Oh my gosh, I love this.
Pretty advanced level. Yeah, and by the way, there are people who think in tens of thousands.
Right.
For them, a thousand is a tenth of a unit.
Right, right.
You, 100 is a tenth of a unit.
How about you? Do you think in hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, more? What might be the impact of that in your financial life, your business life? You're listening to Jewish Money Matters. I'm Yael Trush, your host. Welcome to the show. Today, I'm in conversation with superstar Esti Starr. Esti is the founder of Starr Business Solutions, a multinational business consultancy that's focused on helping small business owners scale their businesses to make big profits. She believes very strongly that people can build professional and profitable businesses doing what they love, and she's here to guide them so that they can bring their vision to life with a lot more ease. More money, less headache is her tagline, and she means it. She means business. Esti has been a certified professional coach for over 12 years. Through Starr Business Solutions, Esti is able to help small business owners around the world by providing business and marketing strategies that will allow them to launch and scale their businesses. Yes, she can help you turn your talent, hobby, certification, or skill into a professional and profitable business. While Esti says there's no one path to doing that, we do get very specific into the business fundamentals and marketing principles that you need regardless of what type of business you're in. She was born with a knack for business, but business wasn't always in the plans. In fact, while she had been an entrepreneur since the age of 10, she ended up as a business coach in a roundabout way that turned out to be just perfect, positioning her to better understand and serve her clients. Almost as if by chance, there is a spiritual and religious journey here too. So listen to all of it and to the surprising reason why she majored in marketing and the journey that led her into the business coaching world. Fascinating story and insightful businesswoman. Here's Esti Starr. Esti Starr, welcome to Jewish Money Matters. How are you? It's so good to have you on the show.
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here.
I am too. I'm not sure. We were saying offline, I'm not sure why we weren't connected before. We have mutual friends, our mutual friend Barry Shore, and suddenly you popped into my LinkedIn and I was like, oh, Esti Starr, I've been meaning to connect with her. And did I just hear that you were off social for a while? Maybe we start off there because you're a business superstar and you coach businesses, and you yourself just mentioned that you were in a 3-year hiatus. Was it 3 years?
It's been social? Almost 4 now.
From social?
We're getting close to 4. Yeah.
Okay. So just saying, there must be really strong business principles here that are in play, because apparently Esti says you don't have to be on social. There's other ways. Let's start there, Esti, because you really are such a wealth of knowledge. Your tagline is more money, less headache. Who doesn't want that?
I've met one person in all of my years who actually said to me, well, I don't need more money and I don't mind headaches. I was like, well, then I don't really think I have anything to offer you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
you know, single digit handful of humans out there who don't. Everyone else I've met, though, does usually want more money and less headaches.
Yeah. So, and you say that you can help us grow any talent, hobby, certification, skill into a profitable business. So I want to start there. And also, you don't have to use social media, apparently.
You don't have to.
Which
you absolutely do not.
Which people, by the way, is one of the objections people have all the time. Well, I just don't want to do that. And also, a lot of people are sitting on this wealth. I see people, I'm like, you're sitting on a gold mine, on this wealth of expertise, and they layer one more certification up on another. I'm like, okay, but where's the monetizing of this? Where are you serving? Where are you adding value? And they're holding themselves back. So let's start. What are the principles that you teach? And I know you have your, is it a 3-day challenge? Remind me.
I have a 3-day marketing success challenge.
Right. Yes. So we're not going to give it all away because I do want people to sign up for that. But what are some of the principles that you stand for, that you teach, that can help us grow that talent, that all those layers of certifications and skills into this profitable business?
15 years of knowledge in 30 seconds or less.
So, yes. No pressure.
There is no one path, right? If you're going to take away one thing from this, there is no one path. There is your path. Mm-hmm. I've built hundreds of business and marketing strategies over the years. I've built hundreds of businesses in my 15 years. Mm-hmm. I've clocked over 12,500 hours of one-on-one business coaching for small business owners. I have never made the same strategy twice. People come to me like, so are we doing Instagram? I said, maybe. Like, well, we're doing LinkedIn? Maybe. Well, what else am I doing? There is no one path. I was big on social for a while. By the way, even during my social hiatus over the last few years, I've launched numerous client businesses on social. We did a 1.5 million year one launch through Instagram. I've done a few 100K, $250,000 launches through LinkedIn. I've taken a bunch of businesses that were hovering in the 20, 50K range, crossing their six figures and multiple six figure marks using social. I don't need to be on it to show other people how to use it. I already figured it out. It didn't change. Details change. So here's what I want everyone to understand. The details will change, but the principles do not. My 6-year-old asked me this morning, because I said to him, mommy's doing a presentation today. So what are you presenting on? I said, business. He said, what kind of business? Telling everyone's a 6-year-old. Okay. This is my actual 6-year-old. So what kind of business? I said, all business. He said, what? A security business? Because we're pulling up to his school. He sees a security guard outside. I said, could also be that. I said, could be any business. He's like, what do you mean any business? A school business? I said, any business. He's like, I don't understand. I said, I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, how do I explain this to a 6-year-old? I said, okay, you know how you can bake a cake, right? You put all the ingredients in and then you put it in the oven and out comes cake. Yeah, that's a business. Mm-hmm. But there's different recipes. There's different ingredients, but there's a way to bake a cake.
Mm-hmm.
It's not different. Once you know how to bake a cake, once you know how to turn something into money, that's a skill. So many people that go to get certification after certification after certification, you know what certification they never get? How to turn it into money.
Yes. Thank you.
That's the thing they miss. So that's the thing they don't know how to do. They take the certification, they're like, now I'll have a business. Well, you didn't think now I'll be a chiropractor or now I'll be a therapist.
Right.
You think now I'll be a business owner. Why do you think that's not a skill the same as the other one? It is. Some people are born with it. Just like some people are born more naturally empathic and more naturally organized or more naturally creative. Some people are born more naturally business minded. I was one of those.
So if we know how to bake a cake, we know we have to take certain ingredients. We have to mix them together. You can't leave them on the counter. And you have to turn an oven.
Kind of starch. You know, there's some kind of leavening agent, unless you want it to be flat.
Right.
You know, there's some kind of sweetener, flavor. Like, you have a basic idea and then you follow recipes. And then when you get really good, you can make your own recipes.
Exactly. Because you know okay, fine. So there's basic ingredients. So let's talk about those basic ingredients in business. Okay. We know the fundamentals and they're the same. So what are those?
So fundamental number one is you need to have something that people want to buy. I know, SD master of the obvious, I'll put on a cape. But you'd be surprised how many people try to go into business because they have something they want to sell. Just because you have something you want to sell doesn't mean it's something someone else wants to buy.
Right.
So that's
it seems so obvious, right?
It's not so obvious, but it is always my step one. And I believe that those two have to go together, right? It should be something that you want to sell that someone wants to buy. This little combination is the foundation of every successful business. Because if there's something that someone wants to buy, but you don't really want to sell it, it's work to build a business. Everyone's like, yeah, look at her sitting on the beach. Who's taking that picture? Who styled her hair that day, right? Who got her new computer when this one got covered by ocean water? All right. Like, there's work there too. She's doing work selling you that she doesn't have to do any work. So cute. It's a thing you do. It's to me the most fun thing in the world. I love it. It was once at a, here's a non sequitur for you. I was once at a gathering. I hang out a lot in the conscious community here in LA, around the world. And so someone's like, oh, nice to meet you. What's your name? Esty. And what do you create? Not what do you do? What do you create? And I was like, businesses and humans.
I love that. Businesses and humans.
5 kids, hundreds of businesses. Feels pretty accurate.
So yeah. There you go. But also you just hit it nail on the head, because we often forget, I say on the podcast, we forget that we do businesses with humans. The human side of business, people. This is not just transactional.
No, it is definitely not. And if it becomes just transactional for you and you lose the humanity of it, not only does the business not necessarily last that long, although again, there are businesses that do, but you lose most of the enjoyment of it.
Yes, you lose.
Right, so
the
even
joy.
If it lasts, like, who wants empty cash?
Yes. Yeah, you definitely lose the joy. Okay, so you need to have something people want to buy,
something that you
and
want
you
to sell that people
okay.
want to buy. Stitch that together.
Together.
Cool.
Okay.
Now you need a way to communicate that to them.
Exactly.
We call that your messaging, your copywriting, your marketing. Give it 5,000 names. I don't care what you call it. You have a
but
thing
it's
that you
all
want to sell that people want to
communicating.
buy. You need a way to tell them that this thing exists. Words, you need a vehicle, you need a way to get this in front of them. You need the thing that they want to buy to be packaged and priced properly. Right? So we can boil everything down into a thing that you want to sell that people want to buy that you have a way to tell them about. We could really boil that down. Right? But if we start to break it up a little bit more, we have the method of communication, the messaging. We have the offer. I'm teaching a class next week called 100K Website. And I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. Part of having a website that earns you 100K a year, a month, in a day is having an offer that can earn you 100K in a year, a month, or even a day. Once again, you would think this is obvious, but I have sat with more humans than I can count who come in. Let's say they're charging $60 an hour as a service provider and they work hourly and they have 6 hours a day total to work. So we run a calculation and we say, okay, you've got a 60-40 on average of task time to actual billable hours, which means of your 6 hours a day, you only have 4 billable hours a day. The other two are taken up with getting new clients, doing your banking, making calls, whatever. If those are really your total work hours, you've got 4 billable hours a day, unless you want to lose your mind, your health, your sanity. Any of the above is fine. Your family, your wealth, everything. You lose everything else when you start to do more than you can. So you got 4 hours a day to work. I take 4 hours times a day, times 4 or 5 days a week, or a 22-day work month, times your $60 an hour rate. You know what I come out with? About $60,000 a year, 50, depending on how many weeks a year you work, depending on how many months you're actually active. And they're just like, oh, I was like, so if I get your marketing to work really well, which I can, and I get you fully booked, which I can, you will still not earn your 100K. There you go. And I've worked with product after product that are the same. My early days, very, very early days. So we're going back to like 2012. Like, it's been a minute. I had this client, one of my first clients, and she wanted to sell these really healthy smoothies. Now, this is 2012. Okay. It's been a minute. Super healthy smoothies that were plant-based. Once again, 2012. This was not a thing.
Okay? No.
It's a very big thing now. It was not a thing 12 years ago, almost at all. Plant-based. You had this special machine, made them out of bananas and fruit. I don't know. Fully organic. She was ahead of her time. And so we set the pricing according to what the market pricing was for smoothies, which was, let's say, at that time, like $2, $3. And then we calculated her cost of ingredients, her cost of materials, forgetting the cost of startup and marketing and labeling and branding and all of that. And we figured out that the cost of each smoothie was about $350. So we call that a nonprofit concept, and not a nonprofit as in the nonprofit entity, as a nonprofit organization, just a nonprofit business, as in it will lose money for right. every smoothie you sell. Mm-hmm. And you won't notice because most people run cookie jar businesses, which means I have a cookie jar, call it a bank account, call it a wallet, call it whatever you want. Money comes in, I put money into it. I need to pay for something. I take money out of it. As long as there's money in the cookie jar, I'm successful, right? Oh, not. You are successful if the thing that you sell earns more than it costs you to sell it. Mm-hmm. All inclusive mm-hmm. products or services. And you earn $100,000 a year, a month, or a day when the thing you sell profits $100,000 a year, a month, a day above any of the expenses you have to sell it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These are foundations.
Right, right, right.
And everyone's so busy with how to build an Instagram funnel that they forget this.
Yes, 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 yes. We forget it. And the pricing. And then when you mention pricing, one of the things that I think about is how often our money mindset comes to hit us like smack in the face, when, especially as service providers, right? When we have to set that price. Can you talk about that a little bit? Do you find that? And how do we work with people with that through that?
There's so much here. So when I work with clients, again, bringing in the money mindset piece, specifically service providers who are billing hourly, you have opposing issues, right? So you have some people who are overconfident, who try to charge much more than they're actually worth in mm-hmm. the marketplace. And they can get that for a time, but it will come back to bite them long term, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the money mindset a lot of people don't often talk about. Mm-hmm. They talk about the money mindset of like, oh, you should charge more. You're much better than that. You deserve it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about the flip side where someone comes in and is like, yeah, he's charging $10,000 a month. I'm charging $10,000 a month. Yeah. So I had one of these guys as not a client because I would not help him sell that. I don't believe in it. I have like, I'm a no BS zone, right? People come into my world and they're like, oh, I'm going to sell for this. I'm like, it's not worth that. What do you mean? But I can sell for that. I said, I don't agree. You shouldn't. It's going to come back to bite you. Mm-hmm. Was out there. And I remember this because I remember it irked me because he was charging more than me, but he was far less competent. And he was a colleague in the business space. And it really irritated me that he was getting like three times as much money for providing less than I was doing. But okay, it bothered me, but I was like, I'm still not. To me, it's important that you charge an appropriate value mm-hmm. for your service, right?
Okay. Right. Not but how do we get
more,
to?
Not too much less and more and less. Is strategic as well. But when you're way off below and you're way off above, it will bite you in one of two ways. So this guy's way off above, goes out there. Let's say he was a business coach. He wasn't, but let's just say mm-hmm. he's in a similar biz development type of space. Goes out there, $10,000 a month. I'm the best coach you ever met. Look at me. I'm so cool. We've seen these guys. They go out there.
Oh, have I?
We've seen them. And he's getting it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know him. So I'm seeing his back end and I'm like, okay, fine. He's rolling 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year. And I lose track of him after about a year. We had a few meetings trying to see if we might partner or work together on different things. End of year two, he reaches out to me. Esty, I need help. What's going on? He said, well, turns out when you sell something, people expect results or they ask for refunds. and turns out that after a year or two in, if you don't have any testimonials or referrals, people don't want to book you anymore. And I'm stuck because I booked all those clients, but I didn't get them exactly the results that I thought. Because like, again, it's a really cheap. I guarantee anything. This one can. Thank you. Hi, me, the one who does things that actually work. Who can guarantee anything? I never promised them a rose garden, blah, blah, blah. But whatever, they're upset. So this guy asked for a refund. This one did a chargeback. And, you know, now I'm getting new leads and they want to talk to my former clients, but I don't have anyone to refer them to. Help. I'm like, just a jerk. You need to start being real with what you actually can do. Mm-hmm. So overcharging is an issue if you cannot actually provide at a minimum what you've promised.
I'm so glad you mentioned this because like you said, it's the one that's not the side of the coin that's often not that talked about.
And it doesn't, and it takes time for it to bite.
Yes.
It's an instant bite. It takes time because people will, and those people, again, they're the snake oil salesmen who used to go town to town to town. They just live on the internet now.
Yes, exactly. But you said something very important and I could just hear the people in the audience thinking, okay, so
How do I find you charge? You said you charge appropriate value for what you're offering. And, you know, there's a range and people are often, okay, so what is that range? Like, where do I position myself within that market range?
Mm-hmm. Well, first figure out what the market range is.
Exactly.
Number one, right? Align yourself to your market, both your direct and indirect competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in that space? So I call a competitor, direct or indirect, anyone that your target audience
mm-hmm.
to pay to solve the problem you're solving.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So let's say someone needs a parenting coach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Parenting coach is such a fun one because it's like, what makes you a parenting coach? So you're a good parent, so you're a coach. So what does it mean? What is the marketplace for parenting coaches? So you have parenting coaches, right? You have private parenting coaches. You probably have some classes and programs. You have workshops. You have people who will just do it themselves, read a book. Okay, so these are your indirect competitors. A book could be your indirect competitor in that marketplace, right? Because if your audience would sooner read a book than hire someone, then
right.
you're not actually competing with the private coaches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most of your audience would go to workshops or parenting groups and classes versus hire a private coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know your people. Your positioning depends on who your people are. Your positioning is always according to how your people would see you in their marketplace of options, which is actually a lot smaller than you think. So you're not competing with the whole world because your
Right.
people would not hire the whole world. They wouldn't use the whole world to solve their problem. Who would they use? So that's your starting point. And if you don't know this, you're at the beginning. You're still in foundation land. You're not ready to build a marketing machine yet. You still need the foundational elements that go into it. I've got to know my people. I've got to know what else they might do, what they're used to paying for. Okay. So some people think, and this is one of the teachings we have in our incubator. When we teach marketing, we teach people business. I teach them pricing theory and I teach them how people think about money. So when you're little kids will think about money in coins still.
Yeah.
Coins are still exciting. And then it's dollars. Here, at a certain age, it's already dollars. Dollars matter.
Right.
So like me and you, I have dollars just floating around my house, honestly.
Right.
Like there are dollars that float around my purse. If somehow a dollar lands in my world, it's kind of, I'll use it as a bookmark. I'll use 20s as a bookmark.
Bestie.
I live in LA. 20 is like a dollar here. It is.
Yes.
Oh, did you want a coffee? Here's a 20. Like that's just how it works. But if dollars are exciting. As you get a little older, it's tens. Right? You don't really think in dollars anymore, but you think in tens. So let's say my older kids, my little ones still think in dollars. The littlest ones, like 10.
Right.
The bigger ones, it's already like tens, 50s. You get to a certain place, you start thinking in hundreds.
Yes.
Yeah. Most adults already think in hundreds, especially if you're anywhere from like lower and getting into middle class. Getting into middle class, you're probably starting to think in thousands. Most people never graduate thousands. There are millions of people who never graduate hundreds. Knowing the units your person thinks in is really significant in pricing strategy.
Oh my gosh, I love this.
Pretty advanced level. Yeah. And by the way, there are people who think in tens of thousands.
Right.
For them, 1,000 is a tenth of a unit.
Right. Right.
You, 100 is a tenth of a unit. If you are selling to, I have people who sell high-end artwork. What high-end means to them depends on them and their audience. I have people who sell high-end artwork in the hundreds and they think it's like, whoa. I have people who sell high-end artwork in the thousands and they think it's like, whoa. And I have people who sell artwork in the tens of thousands. And they don't sell it to the same person.
Right. Right. So then are we saying that the way you think about money, if you think in tens of thousands or whatever it might be, that's going to impact the way
Absolutely.
You're going to price?
It's going to impact what you're going to price because it's going to impact who you're targeting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the failings a lot of people have is they mismatch. They think higher than their market or lower than their market. So when you think higher than your market, you start charging high prices. Your market's like, oh, I can't touch that.
Right.
Crazy. No way.
Right. But there will be people who pay that. So then you
are.
Need to find them.
You find those people. And there are people who think lower than their market. You underprice yourself. Okay. So this is one of my teaching. I call it pricing yourself out of the market. It's where you're too cheap for the expensive people. You're too expensive for the cheap people. You just got caught in no man's land. Let's say someone is selling, let's say wedding tiaras. Yeah.
Okay.
Tiaras. Okay. Gorgeous. Makes these gorgeous custom wedding tiaras, hand woven Swarovski crystal, real diamonds. I don't know, whatever. Not real diamonds, not for this example. Okay. And charges, let's say $500. It's pretty reasonable for a gorgeous piece.
Right.
Okay. But watch this. Someone who doesn't have a lot of money, who's making a wedding, another $500 just for a tiara? Forget it.
No,
can't do
no.
it.
Right.
Someone who's spending $500,000 on a wedding, are they going to spend 500?
No way. To them, it's like out of the
5K.
dollar store, right?
Like one of us go to the dollar store and picking up some little like plastic,
Right.
whatever. So you price yourself out of the market.
Mm-hmm.
There's no market
Right.
for something that's stuck in the nowhere.
Right. So how do we get ourselves out of no man's land here?
So you start at the foundation, you figure out who your person is, and then you figure out what marketplace you exist in. And very often you will exist in the marketplace you're already familiar with, right? Almost every successful small business owner starts their business to solve a problem that they or someone they know has. That is how most small businesses start. I had this problem. I overcame it. Ta-da! I can help you. That's the person who is equipped to help people just like them. Or
Right.
my neighbor, child, relative, boss, someone else had this problem. I'm then profiling that person. And I know what they're used to spending. You know, one of my guys, we hit six figures, 10K months in 6 months. It took him 6 months to build up. He hit 10K months, 6 months from zero. Because we profiled his person. We figured out what they were used to spending. And then he hit them up with exactly what they needed to solve their problem at 33% less. And they're like, okay, you sure? He's like, yeah. That was it. It was that simple. Know your person. Know what they expect to spend or plan to spend on this thing, right? How they think about money and all these other things. Those are deeper understandings. The
Right.
simple path. And these are all the reasons why it's in there, right? And it's just fun for someone
Yeah.
like me to play with. But you're a regular business owner. You go out there, you say, okay, who's my person? What's the problem I'm solving for them? What are they planning on paying to fix that?
Right, right.
Can I do it better? Can I do it cheaper? If I can do it better, I could charge a little more. If I can do it cheaper, then I'm just an easy yes. And that's it.
And I wonder if do we always, you know, I was hearing another interview, you said an easy yes. And I don't remember where I was listening to this kind of like auction principle. And this person was saying, go for the no, not go for the yes. And I was like, oh, this is so interesting. Like sometimes it might be more telling to go for the no and then discovering what is behind that no and then reverting that no. I don't know if I'm saying it properly.
So going for the no is to get to the yes. These are all like these cute
right.
little things. It's like when people get distracted by like, you know, oh, should I put this like really fancy cinnamon spice in my cake? Maybe. But if you don't have any baking powder, it's going to taste like garbage. So like that's a fancy yes. Go ahead, go for the no. But you're going for the no to get to the yes. Oh,
yes.
I need to know what their no is. Yeah, you need to know their no to know their yes. Your goal is the yes.
Yes, of course. Yeah, cha-ching.
Yeah, I saw a training like this a couple of years ago. They were talking about, it was a sales training for telemarketers. And it was specifically in the telemarketing space because everyone's always like, you know, going for the yes, going for the yes, going for the yes. And when you go for the no, you get people emotionally involved and riled up, and then you can switch them to the yes.
The
so
yes,
like
exactly.
The goal is still the yes.
The yes, right. So wait, so then we are going really for a person who is, at least at the beginning, they're really, you are your client. They are pretty much very similar to you.
For coaches and guides, you are best equipped to help the person you used to be.
But as you continue to grow, SD, then there is something to be said for the fact that then your client is going to be somebody else, right? As you evolve as a business owner,
yes
or no?
And. Yes,
okay.
And. Depends what kind of business you want to build. If you want a business that's an easy 10K month business, most people never have to graduate from their familiar circles. It's not that hard to do a 10K month, even a 20, 30K a month business in circles that they're used to. For most businesses, but you can prototype and you can. So when you're scaling, there's a different strategy for launch, grow, and scale. Okay. Launch is 0 to 1, grow 1 to 2, scale 2 to 3. 0 to 1 is do I have a thing that people want to buy that I can charge more than it costs me to sell? That's it. That's launched. Can I get this thing off the ground? Can I get people to pay me money? Will they pay me more than it costs me? And I have a client right now where we're finding the cost, but it's a product-based business. And her initial structure was basically an unprofit business, right? Where it was costing her so much to make the thing, and she couldn't figure out how to charge more for it. So she was charging just basically break even. She's like, well, I don't have to make money the first year. I'm like, you're not going to make money in years. And by the way, when you were last minute and you had to do overnight shipping, you just lost money on every order.
Right. And where does this mindset, I don't have to make money in the first year, come from, by the way? I want you to make money from day one.
I make money from day one. I make money on my planet. We make money from day one.
Right. This is a business. A business makes money by definition.
Tell you the difference. So there's startups and they're starting it up. Right. So I need to make money. It just needs to look like it's going to in the future. Then I get investors. I get people who believe in me. And that's okay if I have that leeway and I'm a heavy risk taker and I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm a strategic risk taker. And I've never lived a life where I just had extra capital lying around that I could just like throw out and hope for the best with. So I've always built my business, and most of my clients' businesses have been bootstrapped. I need to earn money from day one, and then I take a percentage of that and I reinvest it. And I never spend more than I can lose. And that's usually never more than a few hundred or a few thousand dollars at a time.
Right.
And then to start it up is that bootstrapped, right? It's every dollar I spend is the dollar that I'm not spending on dinner or my kids' tutoring or my vacation. Like that's the money. We got distracted. We were doing a thing. We landed back from pricing. I lost where we started from.
No. This is so good. This is so good. So now I'm going to take you to, because you already mentioned it a couple times, 10K months. I know you have one of your programs is this 10K month program. Specifically, you don't talk about 10K in revenue, which is what we hear thrown out so often, right? It's 10K in profit, which again is one of so many things about the way you do your work as they stand out, right? And different in the industry. So 10K in profit, which of course, thank you. If somebody's actually saying it, that's what we're going for. And there's, you say five pillars that will get you to that. And some of them, maybe you've mentioned any others that are part of that.
So the five pillars are your brand, right? Mm-hmm. What are you about? Who are you? Who's your person? What makes us unique? Why should someone buy from us versus anybody else?
Right.
Then I have my actual offer. All right. One second. I missed one. I'm forgetting my own system. I have branding, marketing, sales offer. Okay.
That's okay.
We'll play with it. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why. I have a system for marketing, right? Branding, marketing, sales, it stitches together. Built into that is the offer.
Yeah.
And then on top of that is the goals. Then as soon as you start to scale, we add systems. And so goals and systems are kind of interchangeable.
Yes, and so I understand.
We have brand, which is what's unique about you and who your person is and how you communicate with them. We have marketing, which is how you get out there. What is your promotional path? How are you going to get someone's attention? Right. This is not 1999. You don't build a website and have someone just trip over it because they happen to be surfing the interwebs. And that's not how it works. So you have to get a method of getting in front of people and getting their attention. You need to have a thing at the right price that people want to buy. Right? This is your offer. Then you need to have a sales path from when you get their attention for this thing that you actually convert them into paid clients and customers. And then you have systems and operations where you deliver so that you get recurring customers and clients. That's it.
Right. And is it one offer at the beginning, or do we start with multiple offers, or does that come and skate at the scale?
I think every business is different, honestly.
Right.
There are some businesses, and this is, I've sat for a long time and I've looked at the possibility of creating something that could be cookie cutter, but then I would be like everybody else who has a cookie cutter, and there isn't one. And that's why I get all the people who do other cookie cutter programs and they're like, it didn't work. I'm like, come here, honey, we'll fix it. It's okay.
Right.
There is no one path. There is what's your best initial offer, right? So your best initial offer maybe is graphic design services. That's one offer, but you're making a bunch of different things. Maybe your initial offer, if you're a niche fashion line, is your first season. But it's not one shirt. Could it be one shirt? It
It
could.
could.
It could. And it could be just logos. And you could be a parenting coach who deal just with the terrible twos. There is no one answer.
Right,
it's
right.
That's right for you and your audience in your marketplace at this moment in time.
And you're never married to that one offer, just like you're never married to that one price. These things, you are going to evolve.
You should not be. And so here's the thing. Service is so much easier than product in this way because service pricing is so malleable.
Right.
People always ask me, should I put my pricing on my website? So do you know if your pricing is firm? No. Well, then don't put it on your website. You want to put price ranges?
Interesting.
Depends on what you're doing. There is no one answer. There are rules.
Right.
And the main rules center around the principles. And the principles say, have something that's unique that people would want to buy, have a way to get their attention, have the thing at the right price, and be an offer that they actually want to utilize in that way, right, in that format. Have a path to turn attention into money, and then have a system of delivery that gets you repeat clients and customers.
That's it.
What's inside a business?
That's it. I love that. I so love that. Now let's talk about getting their attention, because you mentioned it doesn't have to involve social media, and so many people have resistance to social media. Some of us don't care, you know, use it and have no resistance to it. So talk to us about that.
So social media, let's just break it down. What is it? It's a social medium of communication. Social media, media is plural for mediums. That's literally what the thing is. They are social mediums of communication. Before social media, we went out.
Right. We networked.
Met people in person. And we got together and we hung out and we spoke. And social media has taken that in-person interaction and put it on the interwebs. Let's put it online. And it's become its own thing, obviously, over time. But the way I like to teach it is as a party. Your website, that's your house, your store, people come to you. Social media is a party. You go to it.
Right.
Every platform is a different kind of party. So Instagram, coffee shop, pretty pictures on the walls, chit chat, mostly ladies, right? Everyone looks pretty, even if they're having an ugly day. It's my pretty ugly day. LinkedIn's a networking event. That's just what it is. It's a business networking event. Everyone's there. They want to talk business. They want to do career development. They're there for that purpose. Facebook, reunion. Right. I met you at a conference one time, my high school, college, something, somewhere. I know you this way. It's a reunion party. Yeah. Twitter, street corner. They actually call it the town square. I used to call it street corner until I read a book about it. And like in that book, it talks about how Twitter was built to be the town square. I'm like, oh my God, I was so right. But that's what it's built for. TikTok slumber party. Yeah. And I made these up, but they're accurate. If you look at TikTok, right? TikTok, you have real ugly days. Yeah.
Yes.
You don't take your TikTok ugly face and put it on Instagram, but you can take your Instagram ugly face, put it on TikTok, and your real ugly face, put it on TikTok. It's fine.
This is
a slumber party. We're all just hanging out. We're all just in our pajamas, dancing on air guitars. Literally what it is. It's every party's got a different vibe. You got to show up differently to each party. What works on one will not necessarily work on the other. That's why you see people who kill it on Instagram and their TikTok is like, now, TikTok, as it's come up, Instagram has tried to absorb as much of it as it can, right? Facebook has tried. So something goes on TikTok a month later, it's on Instagram, 3 months later, it's on Facebook. And then like, you know, your grandma sends it to you and she's like, look, you're like, grandma, I saw that on TikTok like 4 months ago, but thanks. So it takes its route.
Right.
And that's just the ecosystem. That's just the ecosystem of the parties. There are other places to do business.
Yes.
Happen to be amazing. Yeah, and there's multiple ways. And what's beautiful about social media for those who it does work for is that you have free access to humans all over the world who hang out at this 24/7 party. That's pretty cool.
Yes.
But we're not in the dawn of this age anymore. We're in the maturation of it. And so I was just speaking to my social media manager today, and she's only gone on social in the last few years. I started on social. I really took off on social like 2018, 2017. I didn't even get on until like 2015, 16. Honestly, I didn't even have a Facebook. I had nothing. I built my business starting in 2011 without social. Went on for a while. I was like, this is cute. And then went off for other reasons. But I was saying to her how, you know, in the old heyday of LinkedIn, right, back in 2018, part of how so many people grew their following into the thousands is you could just hit connect. 100, 150 times a day on people. And every connection that someone would approve would become a follower automatically. Not like that on Instagram. That's how it was on LinkedIn in the olden days, in the good days. So if you had the patience or a VA who would just sit there going, connect, 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 connect. And the interface made it so easy. You barely didn't have to look at it. You could just like sit like this, like eat your food, like you had to do nothing. And you could get, let's say of those 150 you reached out to, let's say even 50 said yes, you 50 new followers a day, just pressing a button. You don't pay anything, nothing. You can't do more than 20 to 30 a day now. And most of those people won't even say yes because it's a different environment, right? It's like if there was this new party and everyone was just excited to meet each other. And you're like, hey, hey, nice to meet you. What's your name? What's your name? That's what it was like in the early days. Now it's like, hey, hey, what's your name? Would you like to buy my thing? No, I would not like to buy your thing.
Yuck, stay away from me.
Exactly. So that's what it's become. So everyone's a little wary now. It's like, hey, hey, maybe. Do you want, no, I don't, nothing. Stay, go back. I don't want it. And so with social media is a party. Go hang out at the party. Meet people. Interact with them. Build your KLT factor, the know, like, and trust factor. Social is great for that. We are weird humans, as we are, all humans. And Kahneman, Daniel Kahneman, in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, talks about heuristics. And one of the things he talks about is essentially, as a human, I am wired that if I don't have a negative experience of you, I automatically have a positive experience. My default setting is positive unless I have a negative. That means that the more I interact with you and you're not a lion, I put you in my safe box. That doesn't make you safe. But if you haven't done anything to hurt me and I've been exposed to you a few times from my animal brain, right? My deep brain puts you in my safe box. We are 95% subconscious, only 5% conscious. My conscious really, it's just along for the ride. Like it barely does anything. My subconscious, where all the important stuff happens, thinks you're safe. It kind of likes you. It doesn't even know why. Just saw your name a bunch of times. Maybe saw your face a few times. The same as in a neighborhood, in a community. When you see people a couple of times again and again and again, you have a familiar. You get, you'll even, if you're in a strange place and you see someone that you don't know personally, but you know from around, you'll get excited. Because they're familiar. Because we're weird. That doesn't make that person good or safe or anything. It just makes them familiar. Why are you happy to see them? They could be dangerous, but they haven't hurt me yet. And I've seen them a bunch of times. Not a lion. If it was a lion, it would have bit me the first time. So social media gives you the I'm not a lion factor. And then I get excited to see you. You know, I don't know. Oh my gosh, I could be the worst person in the world. But you've seen me on social media a bunch of times and nothing that I did hurt you. So I'm good now.
So it is definitely great to be, to build that know, like, and trust factor. And as long as you have offers to...
It's a great tool, but it's just a tool. It's just one tool.
It's just one tool. So then this can happen elsewhere. Where else can it happen for those people who
where
don't want to be on social?
People? Where else can you meet people? Are there humans other places?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So that's how. Is there another, and even if you want to do a digital marketing strategy that's not on social, are there other digital places that humans hang out? Their inbox. For one. Okay. But there are many, many options, even digital options that don't include social.
But bottom line is you have to get past the resistance and the fear of telling people what you do, why you do it, and how you're here to solve their problem. You have to actually.
If you can't do that, if you can't do that, then why is anyone going to buy from you?
Exactly.
If you don't believe that you can solve their problem, why should they?
Exactly. And when you believe something, you have absolutely no shame and no problem telling anybody about it.
So, you shouldn't.
Exactly. You shouldn't.
And it doesn't, and it's not about being ego, right? It's not about being overconfident. It's real humility. True humility is knowing your value and being able to communicate that. True humility is not undercutting yourself or overblowing what you can do. It's just knowing what you can do. When I say to someone, I can turn any idea, talent, skill, hobby, certification into a profitable business, because I've done it hundreds of times. Show me one.
Show
me, I'll show you how it turns into money.
So let's talk about that. You've done it hundreds of times. Let's talk about your business journey, Esty. I remember I read how in the transition, you were moving from the States to Israel and you went from a lucrative job to a very low paying job. I think that maybe might have been part of the journey, but there's been a business journey that, and you did say at the beginning, I was naturally born with a talent. I was wired for business, right? So who's Esty? How did Esty come to become this business coach that she is today?
Started my first profitable business when I was 10.
10? Oh.
And selling my own handiwork in elementary school and summer camp.
Okay. Handiwork as in what?
I made Mexican name bracelets because they were trendy. I'd never been to Mexico, but friends were traveling.
Yeah, I was going to say, is your family Mexican?
Nope. I'm borderline Mexican at this point. I'm there at least once a month. I have a place down there. I was there. I just got back on Monday last week and I'm going again on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I have a thing with Mexico right now. Mm-hmm. But it's been a thing for the last 3 years and it's just been intensifying. Like in the beginning, mm-hmm. I was there once every few months and then like once a month. And this season, it's been like once or twice a month.
Wait, where do you like to go in Mexico? DF?
I hang out in Puerto Vallarta area.
Oh, well, that's where I would go. Yes.
I hang out in this little beach town. Yes. Like you can walk from end to end of the town, like 20, 30 minutes. And I love it.
Yes, I'm all about the beach. I just landed last night from a retreat in Florida. So I'm like, oh, heaven. Like, I just want to be by the water. I grew up in Puerto Rico. So you can imagine, like, water is like in my blood. And I live in Texas. So it's kind of frustrating.
But anyways, that's a rough time.
I know. It's rough.
Isn't there a part of Texas that touches ocean?
No? Yeah, come on. When you come from Puerto Rico, I mean, that ocean, it ain't ocean, people.
So it's funny. I grew up in New York and now I live in LA and I lived in Yerushalayim in Israel, Jerusalem for almost 10 years. I've never been more than 20, 30 minutes away from an ocean. I can't but I'm happier when I'm not more than 3 minutes away from an ocean, but like 20, 30 minutes is my max.
Listen, Esty, I hear it. Okay, let's go back to those bracelets. So you start making these bracelets.
I calculated cost of goods sold. I created marketing materials, put them in a little. I didn't even know what I was doing, but I knew what I was doing.
Let's just highlight that because that's an important thing that happens in business. So very often we're like, why should I be selling this or charging for it? Like it comes so natural to me. That's exactly why you should, because it doesn't come naturally to everybody else.
Where do you think business comes from? You know, I'm reading a book now that I'm obsessed with called Sapiens. I read a lot. And I am obsessed with this book and I'm up to the chapter on capitalism. Mm-hmm. And capitalism was revolutionary a few hundred years ago, right? Mm-hmm. The economy was basically like, I make things, I get money from those things to live. I make more things, get money from those things to live.
Right.
Capitalism came and said, make things, take a percentage of that money, reinvest it so that you can make more things.
Right.
The essence of capitalism is not, it's not harm. Right? I hang out in a lot of circles where people are like, oh, capitalism is evil. Everything is a tool that can be used for good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
The essence of capitalism is belief in the future and the belief that the pie can be made bigger. That's the essence of capitalism.
Yes.
I believe that if I do something better and I can improve things, I can reinvest through research, through up-leveling my skill, through whatever, then I make the pie bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Not the single size pie. And I was reading that. I'm like, oh my God, I am such a capitalist. I never, but from the essence of it, not an exploitation.
Right.
Just because someone takes a tool and uses it to exploit because they then make it all about the profits. Capitalism is not all about the profits. Capitalism is about the fact that I believe if I invest capital, I have the potential for a better future.
That's all it is.
Charging for something, but there is a danger, and the danger becomes when that becomes my whole identity. And so for personal brands, and I've struggled with this myself on and off over the years, and I've had many clients who struggle with it. When you become a personal brand, it's hard for you to remember that you're also a person. Mm-hmm. Your personal brand is not 100% of who you are. It's one facet. And it can become all consuming, especially when you become a personal brand in the community you live in. So you walk around and everyone sees you as that thing.
Wow.
And now,
yes.
Who are you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am this brand. No, you're not. You're still you.
Mm-hmm.
You're still that mother, ex-wife. My whole identity used to be mother, wife, business owner. Like that was, I'm mother, wife, business owner. Part of why I went off social media is because I had to just rehash my entire being. But you're still a person, right?
Yeah.
I'm a person who loves to dance. I dance 5 to 6 times a week. I'm doing mm-hmm. intensive social ballroom training. I love it. That's not anything I do professionally, nor do I plan on it. Not just because I started really late, because I don't know if it would be as fun.
Yes. Yeah. So let's go back to that journey. So Esty starts at 10 year old. She has a profitable business.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. always had side hustles. My side hustles were different than my friends. My friends would get like Oriental trading catalogs and like bring them to school and then have everybody order things and let upcharge them a little bit. And like, that was their business. My uh-huh. business was always based on my own skill, talent, or hobby.
Yeah.
That was all of my businesses. If I was good uh-huh. at something, I was like, all right, let me sell it. Why not?
So as you grew older, what did you want to do? What did you think you wanted to do when you grew up?
I always thought I was going to be a famous fashion designer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I now live vicariously through my clients. I learned to sew when I was 16. Wow. And my life plan at 16 was to become a famous fashion designer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was my plan. And I've been drawing and drawing fashion and clothing since I have drawings going back to when I was like 12.
Wow. Wow. Interesting. So what happened that you ended up in the business coaching space?
Ah, that was a journey. So 10-year-old Esty runs a business. All the other little Esties run random little hustles selling things, again, based on my own talents. When I was 16, I ran a note copying business in high school. And that admissions essay based on that business got me a full scholarship to business school.
Uh-huh.
Full scholarship mm-hmm. plus, paid for books, transport, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And registered in business school, but did a gap year in seminary in between. Okay. So I almost didn't end up in seminary. The universe had other plans for me. God's like, no, I feel like your life is going to be more fun this way.
So you end up in Israel for seminary? Where?
I did Israel for seminary. Uh-huh. I went to Starfman's, which is now called Benot Torah, where okay. I did not want to go. I was like, I heard girls get brainwashed and fat. Didn't get fat. Did get brainwashed. But I also met some of the most amazing humans I've ever met in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Mentors, colleagues, friends, people that I'm still connected to this day, to over 20 years later. And I got a glimpse of a way of life that I didn't know existed. Okay. I've always been spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up modern Orthodox Brooklyn.
Okay.
So I grew up religious Jewish, mm-hmm. but I grew up in an environment of hypocrisy that is very hard to maintain in the modern world, right? So like I grew up being taught like you have to cover your elbows.
Uh-huh.
But if it's like a few inches above, it doesn't matter. And I have a very high level of integrity. Like that didn't work for me. We have to wash for bread. But like during the week when we're busy, we don't. But on Shabbos, you must. And I'm just like,
oh, interesting. Yes.
Like, no thanks.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I had met a lot of people who didn't have high integrity, who weren't kind, who weren't upstanding. And that was much more important to me than washing my hands in a certain way for bread.
Uh-huh. Okay.
What mattered to me was the interpersonal, and I wasn't experiencing that. What mattered to me was the connection to spirit, and I wasn't experiencing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so by my late teens, I had a foot out the door, basically. Mm-hmm. I wasn't not, because when you're brought up, you're conditioned in a certain way. But I didn't really believe
mm-hmm.
in the system. And I'm not a rules person. I'm a systems person. I don't really mm-hmm. do rules. Rules are suggestions. Systems are things that bring results.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up going to Israel because I was an all expense paid here or abroad.
Who wouldn't want that? Yeah.
Who wouldn't want that? And I was so inspired by the people I met, by the things I learned, by the system. Right? This was a system for family, for community, for spirituality, for living right that I wanted in on.
Wow.
So I bought it completely.
Mm-hmm.
Still went to business school, but was on fire. I used to have an acronym for myself in my early 20s. I said I was an FFB, BTA, BNABT. People were like, what are you, FFB, AEBT? I was like, I'm an FFB, BTA, BNABT. Play with that one. From birth, but took a break now, balls chuba. That was what it was. And I used to explain that to people because I was just always me. I was always out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say, like, when you show me like, oh, they made me, they broke the mold. Okay, they didn't have a mold for me. They just dripped different things in to see what was going to come out. Like, there was no mold. They just stepped inside. I was like, let's see what this becomes. And I was really on fire about Judaism. I really was. I was like, this is the answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Judaism for Jews. I'm not a proselytizer. Everybody
right.
else, you can do your own thing. But yeah. Judaism for Jews, this is the answer to life.
That was me in business school, by the way, in graduate school. That's when I was like super fiery, and I was in business school and it was like this dichotomy. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, so that was me in business school and undergrad, and I was mm-hmm. on fire. And so I started teaching classes on campus on my own. partnered with some of the local clubs, partnered with the Hillel and other ones so that they could fund my pizza. I did. I got free pizza every week on the campus. And I gave these classes and I was just on fire. And I was in school because I was in school, right? Because
right.
I was ready. Because
you have to do it.
Me anything.
Right.
But I was on fire about Judaism. And so I ended up majoring in marketing because I was like, Judaism gets a bad rap, right? No one taught me what this thing is really about. I didn't understand it. If someone had explained it to me growing up, I could have had a better life. Because I was on fire about Judaism. So I actually majored in marketing because I wanted to market Judaism.
No way.
That is why I don't tell that to most people, but that is the true story. I almost majored in finance because I also love numbers. My husband used to say I see the world in zeros and ones, and I do. They wanted me to be an actuary. I wanted to be a famous fashion designer. My parents wanted me to be an actuary, and I could have, but boring. So I didn't. But I do.
My husband is just like that. He literally sees the world in numbers. It's like the weirdest thing.
Yeah, I do.
To me.
So like, I love like Mandelbrot set, one of my favorite things. Like theoretical mathematics. I've been studying metaphysics and quantum mechanics for the last few years. Like, I love it.
Oh, no. I mean, I love numbers, but I don't think like that. Okay, go on. This is fascinating.
So I majored in marketing, so I wanted to market Judaism. I minored in advertising and communication, and I used all the skills I was learning to create my promotional materials for my Torah classes that I was doing on and off campus. And that was going to be my life. I had no plans on being a business coach. My plans for life was to be a religious wife and mother and work in Jewish outreach.
No
that was my
way.
Life plan in my early 20s. Yes.
Okay. And then what happened?
Well, I went and I got a job in Jewish outreach. My first job out of university was for Aisha Torah.
No way.
PR. Exactly what I wanted to do. Got my dream job. But I did it the same way I teach sales now. I had this portfolio that I had built of all the classes that I had done on campus, all the marketing materials I had created, everything. And I took the train up to West 83rd. I Googled them online. I've been using H.com for a lot of the material for my classes. So I found the local branch, didn't know anything about the Kira world at all. Took the train up to West 83rd, knocked on the door. Hi, my name is Esty. I want to work here. I got a job. First I worked at the Discovery program. And then somewhere in my first year on the job, I met my husband, my ex-husband. And we decided we wanted to live in Israel. So moved to Jerusalem. That's when I got demoted. Right?
Oh, that's the story. How you ended up making like $5.50. Okay.
And I had to start working as a secretary. Because that was what I had. And that was the going rate for secretaries at the time. But I was a kolel life. My husband was studying. I was the primary breadwinner. My Hebrew was passable. Now it's very good. But it wasn't good enough for me to work in an Israeli environment, not in marketing and PR. Plus, I wanted to be in a Jewish Kirev environment. That was what I wanted to do. So I first got there, I started working for Asian Discovery Program and all these things. I was teaching in all the seminaries. I taught in Sharpman's. I was teaching in Asian, Jewel, and all the different ones. That was my life. I was a Kirev Rebbetzin. That's what I did. I loved it.
And get over the story. Okay. And then what happened?
Most people don't know this because I wasn't online in those days. I don't usually tell this story. It's cute. You're getting this out of me. It's a long time ago. So what happened? So I worked my way up. So I ended up working for Nerla Elef, now known as Olami, in its early days.
Yes.
And I ended up working just first there as a secretary and then getting promoted and promoted until I essentially became the CIO. So I started as a secretary, but then they started giving me projects. And so I started building out. It was just the dawn of their growth. And so I started building out all of their database systems and backend and reports and controls and all of the processes. I would take over all the budgets. Like, we were running multi 8-figure budgets.
It was
huge worldwide operation. We had 250 projects around the world. It's a massive operation. I don't know where it's at today. I've been gone more than 10 years, almost 15 years now. 2011 is when I left. But I was working and then essentially in back end Kirev and still teaching on the front end and teaching for them and teaching other classes around, and hosting an open home. And
but you're an employee. You're not, there's,
but I was,
you know,
an employee.
You're getting paid your salary.
I'm getting paid a salary. I'm working as an employee. I only got named CIO like after I left because they have a very low glass ceiling. And so when I was there, they would not give me a C-level title, even though I was working a C-level position. They didn't even want me to have business cards. I was like,
what?
I need business cards. I'm meeting external stakeholders. Like, I need business cards. So my business card, I still have the old one, said reports and controls. After
No
I left, I
way.
asked my boss, I said, I'm building up my resume. Can I put myself on a CIO? He said, yes, I have permission from my direct boss to do that. Because that's what I was when I was in there. There's too many politics. There are a few different founders in the organization. And so politics would never let a female have a C-level position.
Oh gosh, okay.
So I operated at a C-level position with a non-C-level title.
And
But I ran
also
a
with
whole
a non-C-level salary.
also with a non-C-level salary. But
Okay.
it was enough. I loved the work. I loved the work. I'm still not about the money. I'm about the work. I'm about the service. The money needs to be fair. It needs to match. It needs to work. But there was a point. So then again, as all nonprofits do, nonprofits aren't run by the people who run them. They're run by the donors. The
Yes.
donors wanted something else, something new. They brought in this new middle manager, and he was terrible. Really funny stories about him. But he basically came in. I had a team of three that I was managing, which is almost unheard of in the organization, also for a female to manage a team. There's only one other woman in the whole organization that managed a team of people. And it's like high-powered female only fell in there by accident, and they only stay there with extreme amounts of self-control, basically, or they left. But I was supposed to travel to Moscow, to Argentina. I was like gearing up for all these trips to review different projects we had in the field. And this new guy comes in. He's like, nah, your team is my team. Your trips are my trips. And you're my new secretary. I was like,
Time to move on.
actually, I'm the new leaving person. Yeah. But
Yes.
it was so toxic. It's hard to explain. Like in those years, I was not a crier. Now, like, I'd probably cry most days just as like a stress release. But in those days, like I was not a crier, and I would come home crying every day. I'd be crying during lunch. He was a very difficult person, this person that they hired. He was a difficult personality. Funny story. 2 years after he had gotten hired, he got fired. And at that point, he tried to go out independently. And I left a few months into his employment. And so 2 years later, I was already established on my own, which I'll tell you how I got there. And I met him at a networking event. He's like, oh, Esty, do you remember me? We worked together at this organization. I left. I heard all about you leaving from my coworkers. I left. I'm not there anymore. And now I'm looking for independent work. Do you have any clients to recommend me? I was like, really have zero level self-awareness? Do you not understand that I left because of you and I think you're terrible? I was so floored. I was like, you have no awareness whatsoever. None. He had no awareness. None. Anyways, but it was super toxic for me. It was a really terrible environment. And I couldn't function. And I couldn't take care of my kids. My entire essence, again, wife, mother, employee. Like that's my whole more hours in the day than that. And we had a fully open home. We would host guests every week, as many young couples do in Jerusalem, and especially in the outreach world. And so I did leave. And already a few years prior, so there was a bit of an overlap. A few years before that, somewhere around 2009, I'd always been a mentor. So on the side, one of the things I'd always done has been mentoring, but that was always volunteer. I'd mentored for OHEL and different organizations and kids from abused homes and all different things, big sister programs. And so I'd always done mentoring, and I've clocked my 10,000 hours of therapy over the years. I've done a lot of therapy, like a lot, like a bucket ton lot. And so I thought, like, do I want to be a therapist? I don't. I'm very empathic, and I own people's problems. And so I was like, I don't want to be a therapist. So 2009 was like the dawn of coaching. And I was like, huh, coaching is like therapy, but it's not about the problems. It's about the solutions. I can do that. I'm a problem solver. I'm an optimizer. I can do this. So I became a certified professional coach already in 2009. And I started taking clients on the side as a coach, but in my early days, I didn't know I wanted to be a business coach. I have the early business, and I always made a business card because I'm professional. Made a business card from when I was in, I had business cards from when I was already in my late teens, right? I was an inspirational speaker. I did hairstyling. I did
Oh my
database structure. I did all that. I have a little file of like all my business cards over the years. Vistaprint and I, we were besties before anyone knew they existed. I was doing Vistaprint from
Oh my
2003.
gosh, Vistaprint, yes. Okay.
Vistaprint 2003. All right. So I started coaching. I was doing financial coaching. I was doing organizational coaching because I'm very orderly, right? So I was a professional organizer for a while, right? I was doing finances. One of my early clients would have me open her mail, calculate her budgets. Like I was doing all the things. I wasn't even doing marketing anything because I'd had my job. I'd done a little bit of marketing in the organization, but most of my job had been operational and information structures. So when I first started my business, I thought I was going to do the first name of my business was Strategic Business Systems. was SBS, which is cool because now it's become Star Business Solutions. So the SBS kind of carried itself with like this very interesting arc. But I thought I was going to just do business systems for people because that's what I was already really good at. My background's in marketing. So I started getting clients because I would sit in these cafes in Yerushalayim and I'd overhear women going like, "Oh my God, you're so talented. You can sell your cupcakes for a dollar. It'd be amazing." Like, "Oh my God, like I can help you." Right. 2011, after the 2008 recession, a lot of couples in Yerushalayim were losing their support. So this is another thing most people don't know. I started my business because I was a kolel like wanting to help other kolel couples. A lot of people did not have the education. They didn't have the background. They didn't have the training. And one of two things were happening. Either a lot of the women had been pushed into one of the three approved professions at the time, which was basically PT, OT, speech, right? Now you've added ABA and we've like a few, we've ultrasound technique. We've got a few other ones we've like added. That's so sweet of us, right? For people who have completely different skill sets, but whatever. So you'd have these women who are like, "I dream of starting a magazine, but I'm just a speech therapist." And like, it killed me.
It
It
killed
killed
you,
me to
yeah.
watch people have these incredible talents and gifts that they could share with the
It's so
world.
painful.
It
It's so
hurts.
painful. It hurts.
And not have the ability to do it. And then their spouses, like a lot of the guys just had no training whatsoever. And so you have these couples who are depending on support from abroad. Their support from abroad has dried up because of the recession and they're having to leave learning. They're struggling to pay things. I knew what it was like to have to go get a 5-15 hour job. Right? I had that only in my early days, right? Within a year, I was promoted and moved up and up. But just wanted to help. I knew I could. I knew I could because I'd been building businesses since I was 10. I didn't even know what I knew. I knew that I could do better than they were doing. And I knew that I could help them turn those talents and ideas and hobbies and skills and certifications into money. I knew it from the beginning. I didn't know how to be a consultant. I didn't know. I'd become a certified coach already a few years prior. So I'd been coaching on the side. And then some of the clients I was coaching organizationally and financially had wanted to start businesses. So I'd help them start their businesses. It was just this very organic process of like, I want to do, and then it was something I couldn't let go. It's like, I want to do this. So when I left my job in 2011, after having been a coach on the side for a few years, where I was like, okay, took three jobs. I started working in business brokerage. I started working for the Mobile Marketing Association and sales support so that I could get updated on marketing methods. And I started to try to do my own consulting. The only model I'd ever seen for consulting is that the nonprofit that I had worked for had hired a consultancy. So this is part of the dawn of the idea, honestly. And God works in such mysterious ways, right? You get seeded things that only start to germinate years later. And you're like, I don't know why this is happening. And then years later, you're like, 2020 hindsight is such a cute thing. And so the company had hired a consultancy because again, misogyny. And the consultancy had told them all the things that I'd been telling them for years, but they got paid more and they got listened to. And I was like, I am in the wrong line of work. I get paid less. I'm not taken seriously, but I am smarter than these people because they're saying all the things I said, but they're missing pieces. And so they hired this consultancy and I also ran a lot of the budgets on the back end. So I knew, I saw how they charged. I saw their business model. I saw what they did because I was interfacing with them. So my only model of consulting was being an employee in an organization that hired a consultancy and seeing both front ends and back ends, how they operated just in terms of working with us. I never worked for a consultancy. I only worked with a hired consultant. But I was just like, I'm in the wrong line of work. And then we did this whole project. They launched it. And at the launch meeting, they're like, okay, da da da. They present their thing. And I'm like, okay, and what about this? And they're like, well, no one told us that. I'm like, I told you that about 7,000 times. I could show you the emails if you want. They're like, well, no one told us this that we listened to. And I was just like, this is trash. They had to trash the whole thing because they didn't listen to me. You better believe they listened to me the next time. That was very cute. It was like there are tens of thousands of dollars down the drain because there was a key point that I kept trying to explain to them, and they were like, "No, it's not important." I'm like, "But it is.
But
Not
it is.
important. You're a loss." And that just really landed for me of like, I'm in the wrong line of work. I am too smart to be not listened to, and it's a waste. It was such a waste. So that was the seeding for consulting. I'd already become a certified coach. And then I had this crazy desire to help all these people who couldn't make ends meet. That was the birth of my business.
Incredible, incredible. But you
Incredible.
took then, did you mention that you still took other jobs?
I still took other jobs when I started, absolutely. And I had unemployment. So I had 6 months of unemployment. Plus, I took two other jobs at the same time because I didn't know if this was going to work. Remember, until this point, I've only ever had side hustles. I never knew that what I do now full time for almost 15 years. Sorry, 2011 full time, 2009 is when I started. So I've been doing it part time for 15 years. I've been doing it full time since 2012. It's been my only job. 2011 is when I took all three, but by 2012, I was doing just this because it started taking off. I never knew that I would have a full-time business of my own. I never thought I'd be anything more than an employee with side hustles. This became a thing. And then I couldn't find another job that would give me the level of challenge, income, and freedom. Flexibility. Yeah, right. I had three little kids at the time. Now there's five. They're not as little. This one was born in the early days.
Right.
I did not know that it would become what it became. By 2019, we had staff and clients on 6 continents and 10 time zones.
No way.
Yeah.
Over 22 people on the team. I think it's important though, because so often we think you have to just leave it all and go all in.
I don't agree with that. I say don't quit your day job. I actually say the opposite. I say do not quit your day job.
Right.
You don't know. Now, there are times, I quit my job, but I didn't quit because I believed in my business.
Right.
I quit
you quit when the business proved. No, but meaning when your business proved that
I quit the other ones when my business proved that it could handle it. Correct.
I think that's a very, very, very important point. Wow. So, Esty, I guess we have to wrap it up, and I just want 2 more hours with you.
I do have another meeting to go to.
Yes. So I'm going to wrap it up with what I like to call Jewish Money Matters, a fill in the blanks, and maybe we'll get you here another time, but let's do these for now. I do it with every guest. When I give Meiser or Tzedakah, I like to give to
whatever strikes my heart at the moment.
Beautiful. And there's so many things popping.
I don't have one cause. I have whatever. Like, I have an account and then whatever calls me.
Ah, you see, people, she has an account. I always say, have a separate account.
I have a Meiser account.
Exactly.
Money comes in. So this is an important thing for business.
Have you been listening to this podcast, Esty?
No, I've just been living my life. Sorry. The thing that I do that took me years to figure out, because when you're a business owner, it's very hard. Do I take Meiser off of revenue, off of profit? So the thing that I figured out for myself that I tell my clients is I have two separate. I have a business account and a personal account. When I transfer money from business to personal, that's what I take Meiser on.
Exactly. We say it here all the time. Yeah. Exactly. All right. I'd love to make more money because
I have so many things to do. I have specifically a nonprofit that I plan on starting in the next few years.
Nice.
I also, my kids are growing up, right? We've got seminary tuitions. We've got different things for them. But it's more the projects. It's more the things I want to do.
Beautiful. Something I wish I'd learn about money growing up is?
It is much less important than you think.
Nice. Interesting. Interesting.
That's coming from someone whose entire professional focus is how to earn people more money.
Make more money. Right.
It is not the most important thing. I wish I knew that growing up. Growing up to me, money was, my brother said it best, money is air. If you are drowning and you have money, you will live. That was our teaching growing up.
Really?
And it's wrong. Wow. But it's definitely part of what created my wiring.
Right. But it's interesting that it created in this balanced way, because so often if we grow up like that, we go the other extreme, you know, like let me be the starving artist.
Yeah.
Right. You found a way to find
that. I went for like money all the time. How do I make more of it? But my integrity never allowed me to do anything to get it. Yeah. So it was always like, how do I make money with integrity?
Yeah. Yeah, it's also because you're so mission driven. It's like the first follow the mission and the money's going to follow. Like, that's Judaism right there. It's just going to be.
Yes, and the money's going to follow if you do it right. Right.
Yeah, so like, no, of course. You need the strategy.
Every lie, there's a seed of truth.
Yeah.
Do what you love and the money will follow. Stands because it has a seed of truth. The seed of truth is do what you love with proper professional backing procedures and processes. And
100%. Very well said. 100%. Good for you. Very nice. Okay. Money, spiritual or physical?
Energy.
Oh, nice.
It's a physical manifestation of a spiritual energy.
Nice. Something I splurge on unapologetically is?
Mexico trips. Every month or twice a month.
Esty, spender or saver?
Saver.
Really? Saver?
Really saver.
Always?
Yeah, I would always rather be saving than spending. It is much more fun for me to earn and save money than spend it. Spending is hard for me. Mexico is one of my few unapologetic splurges. There's not that many of them. I much prefer to earn and save.
Good for you. Today, I'm most grateful for
my kids.
Baruch Hashem. And finally, I'm Esty Star, and I believe Jewish money matters because
I believe money matters, and having a perspective on it. And I think Judaism does give, when you get into the essence of it, it does give a very balanced and appropriate perspective. It's just important. You can't ignore. It's like ignoring gravity. It's at your own risk. It's there.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. SC Star, you are a star. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to leave us off with that 3-day challenge. I want to encourage everybody to sign up for that. Tell us a little bit about that again.
Sure. If you go to scstar.com/free gifts, you will find a 3-day marketing success challenge. It is usually something that you pay for. At the moment, it is there free. I do not know how much longer it'll be there free. So if you hear this podcast in a few months' time, I might have swapped it out with something, but there's always something cool at scstar.com/free gift. And at the moment, you will get a 3-day marketing success challenge. So just spell my name right. So ESTIESTARR.com/free gift. I hope you know how to spell that. And you will get access to a fun, cool toy.
Esti, thank you so much. This was so enlightening. I love what you're doing. And I'm so happy that we finally got connected. Thank you so much.
Likewise. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again to SC Star for stopping by. You can find her at estistar.com. That's ESTIESTARR.com on Instagram or LinkedIn at SD Star. Be sure to check out her free 3-day marketing challenge at estistar.com/free gift. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave a review and rating on Apple Podcast. On Friday, I will pick a reviewer of the week and give them a 20-minute call. I'm off to Florida again this week. Yes, I've been quite the traveler, and I will never say no to a place with beach water, people. So Florida, here I come again, and maybe, just maybe, this time I'll record more of my travels on social, because apparently people weren't happy that I didn't do much of that last time, but come on, I just want to get away and not share what I do while I'm at it, wouldn't you? Send in those questions. You know where to find me, Yael at YaelTrush.com, or you can DM me on Instagram. I will see you here Friday. Have a great week.